We're going to start this segment with Stephen Gitcher, I'll get it right, who we've been talking about a book which he edited and contributed to for several weeks now, because there have been so many fabulous articles in it. Replays, Rivalries, and Rumbles, the most iconic moments in American sports. Stephen, welcome to Downtown.
Hi, nice to be with you.
Well, as I've been extolling this book over the last several weeks, one of the things that has struck all of us here, Rich and I and Carrie, everybody that's talked about this book at all, is that usually you'd see 12 articles in a book like this, but you have got many more. They're very concise, but they're still well-researched. How did you go about deciding what the template for this was going to be?
Well, that's an interesting question. I am an academic historian. I read a lot of academic history in sports and in other fields, but I guess my preference is to read history that I think other people might be interested in reading as well, what you might call the general audience or popular history. That, I think, was the idea I had when I tried to put this book together a couple of years ago. It seemed to me that there were a number of events or personalities in sport that everybody knew about, and yet maybe not quite accurately. And maybe we could kind of retell the story using academic research and expertise, but tell the stories in a way that would appeal to people.
Well, it certainly really succeeded at that. I teach creative writing at the University of Maine in Hockey Lit. And I get so many books every year, and they're just so turgid and they're so cumbersome, and I can't give it to someone to read. But this, you can give to lots of people to read. And I was so pleased when I opened the Dick Crapo was the one who put me onto this, and I opened the table of contents and I saw all my friends from SLA represented there, and people from Nash. Do you think that maybe one of the reasons that so many people don't understand a lot of these iconic moments? It's because they've either only had quick journalistic sound bites to go by, or they've passed on. They it occurred at a time before anybody really got to think about them.
Maybe a little bit of both. You mentioned Dick Crapo, and of course his essay in this book is on the 1958 NFL championship game between the Baltimore Colts and the New York Giants. A game which has been called by many people the most important pro football game ever played. Well, maybe not. It's a phrase that's associated with that game, and people repeat it without anybody really have given it a lot of thought to it. And so that's what Dick does.
Well, and I think what's really, we had Upton Bell on a couple of times recently, who of course would maintain it was the greatest game of all
sure.
time. But even Upton said that it has become something other than what really happened. I mean, people think that it was a much better football game than it was, and really it was a pretty sloppily played game. But before we get to any of these other guys, I wanted to talk very much about your piece on Curt Flood.
Sure.
Because I think if you ask the average American, well, gee, how did things work out for Curt Flood? They say, oh, yeah, great, he got rid of the reserve clause. But, of course, nothing could be further from the truth.
Right, and they might precede that remark by saying, Curt Flood wanted to become a free agent, he wanted to change teams, and he helped get rid of the reserve clause. Well, in fact, he didn't want to change teams. He wanted to stay with the Cardinals. It was the Cardinals who traded him, and it was that trade that precipitated his decision to file the lawsuit, which, of course, he lost.
And the lawsuit that he lost might have gone better if he'd had better counsel.
That's perhaps true, yes. The vote in the Supreme Court was 5-3. One justice recused himself because he owned stock in Anheuser-Busch at the time when the brewery owned the Cardinals. So he recused himself, but the vote was 5-3 against Flood. He was represented by Arthur Goldberg, who was also at the same time as he was preparing the legal defense running for governor of the state of New York.
He was
distracted.
Yeah, which I remember, because I'm old enough to remember this, he said he was not going to do. And, he left the Lyndon Johnson got him to leave the Supreme Court, and by flattering him, I think, And then he ends up running disastrously for governor of New York. Well, just for the for our listeners, especially those that, that are younger, could you just sort of walk us through all the basic phases of what happened when Flood and McCarver were traded to the Flood losing the case?
Well, this was in the late 60s. Flood and McCarver had played on three championship games. Championship teams in with the Cardinals of 64, 67, and 68. But after the 69 season, which was not a good season for the Cardinals, the Cards and the Phillies engineered a seven-player trade. McCarver, Flood, and two other players went to the went to the Phillies, and the Cardinals were supposed to get Dick Allen, then generally called Richie Allen, Cookie Rojas, an infielder, and a starting pitcher named Jerry Johnson. And Flood liked living in St. Louis. He liked playing for the Cardinals. He had friends in St. Louis. He had business connections in St. Louis. He liked this city. And at the same time, he did not like Philadelphia. His opinion of Philadelphia, right or wrong, is that it was the most racist town in the National League. He certainly didn't want to become a Philadelphia Philly and have to live in Philadelphia for part of the year. So after talking to friends and acquaintances, including a couple of attorneys, he decided to sue Major League Baseball to claim that he was not chattel. That was the word he used, I think, in the letter, and that he had the right to play where he wanted to play. In essence, he said, I want to become a free agent so I can stay in St. Louis, not so that I can go somewhere else. He had an interesting relationship, or let's say the case had an interesting relationship with the Players Association, who gave him some support, not a lot of support. Marvin Miller thought it was a losing hand he was trying to play. It went through a trial in New York, which was kind of a circus in a certain sense, a lot of publicity, a lot of celebrity witnesses. The judge himself was a baseball fan who wanted autographs from people, Flood lost. Eventually, he took it all the way to the Supreme Court, and he lost that decision, too. I don't think all of the decisions were sound legally. I'm not an attorney. I don't play one on TV or even on the radio. But everybody was taken with the notion, and this includes a lot of former players, that if baseball lost the reserve clause, the sport would collapse.
That was not the most prescient of views.
No. So they kind of argued back from that judgment to what the decision in this case had to be.
And one of the people also think that this was the first time this had been challenged, but it had been challenged in the past, especially yeah. during the Players Revolt and the like in baseball history. But also it was this whole idea of antitrust exemptions for sports had a lot of fans in the Senate and in the Congress of the United States, because a lot of those people were the recipients of large donations from people that own sporting teams.
Right. Yes. Yes, indeed. Doesn't sound too different from the current situation.
No, I was going to say it doesn't sound much different. Now, one of the things I wondered, when you put this book together, not because I'm trying to copy this, but I would if I could, did you say, okay, I want so many thousand words and I want you to write this so that everybody can read it? Or did you just sort of say, I want you to write the article you'd want to read on this?
We gave each of the authors a word limit. We negotiated a little bit. Some people wanted to do a lot more. Maybe one or two wanted to do some wanted to do a little more. Maybe one or two wanted to do a lot more. But we kind of had a page limit involved in mind. The people at the University of Illinois Press who have published this book, they too were interested in producing a book that might actually sell a few copies.
Well, you know,
didn't want it to be too thick.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think that press deserves credit. I think Dick Crapo's book on the NHL is a great example of exactly how you could read a book about the history of the National Football League and for a general audience.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, go ahead.
going. No, I joked with the authors, although I was serious. I said, you know, as you prepare your essay, we want no academic theory, no passive voice, no use of the word hegemony, and no footnotes.
Yeah, I am so glad the word hegemony is not in there.
And they laughed just as you laughed, but I meant it.
Well, I couldn't be happier that you did that, because one of the things to me, as someone who teaches, you can take this book to a sports history class of undergraduates, and you can have them learn a great deal, and they can read about it, and if they become fascinated, as all of us do with different stories, they can dig in deeper. I mean, I thought Dennis Gilday's article on the rise and fall of the National Sports Daily, which he presented at SLA last summer, was really something that I think young people in the day of the blog and the day of the instant journalism should really read and understand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that's true. I think it can be used in sport history classes for undergraduates. And not only that, but so many of these incidents are complicated. And if a professor took the time in class as part of a lecture to explain them, you'd take up the whole class period.
Exactly.
But now you can say, you know, read this essay and you'll see it in all of its complexity.
Yes. When we were talking with Stephen, I want to say, get it right this time, Gitchier, is that correct?
Gitchier, there you go.
Gitchier, about replays, rivalries, and rumbles, both about his article about Curt Flood in here, his essay article about Curt Flood, and about the book itself. And one last question I wanted to ask you is, how are you thinking about another one?
I suppose I've given like maybe 3 minutes of thought to another one. That would take some doing, I think.
Yeah, so I added an annual. Go ahead.
A premature notion.
Yeah, I added an annual fiction anthology, and every year I think it's the last one, but
sure.
It takes a lot of work. Well, Steve, it has been a real pleasure to talk to you. It's been great talking about the book. We have Stephen Hardy's coming up, Chad Carlson's coming up in a few weeks. We want to talk to Maureen. We talked about her book about Wilma Rudolph a little before. So you've given us a great season of things to talk about here on Sports Lit 101, and we thank you very much for joining us.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for your kind words.